G'day, I'm Sean and welcome to the Car Expert Podcast. Today we are talking about everything from the Beijing Motor Show and some more, but stick around, we're going to talk about Beijing. We're going to talk about a few other things first. Scott and James, how are you guys doing this week?
Good, thank you.
I'm a little bit overwhelmed by Beijing.
That's a lot they that's come out.
They get bigger every year, those Chinese motor shows.
You remember we talked not long ago about how the motor show was dying? I think China didn't get that memo.
No, they're absolutely making up for the rest of the world.
Yeah. And James, how was your trip to Tassie? I know you can't say much yet, but...
Yeah, it was good. Tasmania is just a really nice place. It's a great place to drive, and I'll hopefully be able to share some more stuff very, very soon about the cars I was driving
there. Yes, which we can say was the BMW X2 and iX2, yes. Wasn't it? So we'll talk about them in the coming weeks. But let's dive in. I think some of the big news that surprised everyone this weekend was a Cybertruck appeared in Sydney. For so long now, we've been told it's not coming to Australia. And then lo and behold, Tesla opened up the doors of the shipping container and there's a Cybertruck. Who wants to tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, based on what we understand, it's a marketing stunt. This Cybertruck is the only one in Australia. It's left-hand drive and it's registered on dealer or manufacturer plates, which means it can be driven. And it was taken on this tour of really prominent spots in Sydney. It went to Bondi, it went across the Harbour Bridge that immediately went on Tesla's social media. Tesla has since announced it will be doing a publicity tour. It's going to be at 4 showrooms around New South Wales to start with. And from there, we expect it to come to Victoria, Queensland, South Australia as well. Beyond that, we don't know a heap. The Cybertruck was meant to go on sale in Australia a little while ago. You could put a deposit down until about 2021.
I think a lot of people just put deposits down. Absolutely.
But the car itself doesn't really appear any closer to Australia. It's still got plenty of stuff going on in the States with recalls and build quality issues that they need to work out. It's going to be interesting to see how the public reacts to it here.
Mm. I think, from my understanding, it's part of a wider marketing tour. They're going to be taking it to a bunch of right-hand drive countries and showing it off. James, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? Because they keep saying, like, they can't even deliver orders in the States and then they've got a stop sale at the moment. But what do you make of this whole marketing attempt?
It just seems like another Tesla marketing point. Like, they like to do things that get a lot of attention. And if that's the objective, then great. I think it's definitely garnered a lot of attention, not just for Tesla, but for that car in particular. I guess it might refresh people's minds about what that car is and the interest around that, because obviously you could put deposits down not long ago. And also, is it an opportunity for Australians to actually see what it looks like in the metal and perhaps will be a really good gauge of potential customer sentiment to that vehicle if it ever does make it here. But, you know, they can't even sell the Model S and Y here anymore, which, you know, used to be here. So I don't know how long it's going to be until we see a Cybertruck in a Tesla showroom or something like that.
It's also worth noting that this last couple of weeks for Tesla has been, in Australia, all about price cuts. The Model Y and Model 3 both got massive cuts at the start of April and then cuts of about $2,000, depending on the model, last week in Australia. It's still the best-selling electric car brand in the country, the Model Y just ahead of the Model 3 and then everyone else behind that. But there is a lot going on in the broader Tesla world that we've obviously spoken about on the site that isn't maybe as sexy, you know, isn't as worth talking about on the podcast. It does feel like maybe Tesla needs to distract a little bit from what's going on in the States with Elon, what's going on in the States with the model, sorry, excuse me, going on in the States with the Cybertruck stop sale, the fact it's cutting its prices in Australia. It's a good bit of press aside from all the other stuff we've been talking about for a while now, and maybe that's the point.
So let's just talk about that stop sale quickly, because I think it's worth touching on. For every good news story there is about Tesla, there's about 5 bad news stories, but this one is really quite bad. So it's been my understanding the accelerator pedal could get stuck.
It has been fixed though.
Okay.
So the temporary solution is if you own one of these cars, you take it back to a Tesla service center. They've got a little bracket and then they drill a little rivet into the bottom of the accelerator pedal that then stops it getting stuck.
Seems like a very odd fix for what you would assume is a fully fly-by-wire system.
If it works, it works. I'm not here to say it doesn't work, because if it works, good on your Tesla.
Yeah, I tell you what, if your accelerator pedal in your Tesla tri-motor Cybertruck got stuck, you would know about it.
You would absolutely, you'd know about it just as you started to take off.
Yeah, so with the people 4 states away when the car eventually stops. Okay, so we're going to stick with some electric vehicles. We're going to talk about the MG Cyberstar. Now, this is kind of an exciting car. This is, speaking of Tesla, it's the Tesla Roadster that Tesla couldn't build. MG Cybersteer is, I guess, a 2-door coupe, 0 to 100 in 3.2 seconds, I think it is. But they've just announced pricing in the UK, which means we're sort of getting an understanding of how much it's going to cost. And it's not good if you were saving your pennies for it, is it?
Yeah, so it works out to the equivalent of about $100,000 Australian dollars, which is like around 50,000 British pounds, or in the 40s to 50 bracket. The thing with UK pricing that we often have to stipulate is that the way that the direct conversions work aren't always indicative of how it's going to arrive here. A lot of things in the UK are very, very expensive relative to what they are here if you do a direct comparison. But that kind of positioning is where a lot of our, you know, like a base, I think it's still cheaper than like a base Boxster or something like that. But there's a lot of things in that bracket where, you know, even Golf R's and Audi S3s are in that same bracket. And here they're in like the $70,000 to $80,000 realm. So depending on how many variants we see, it might be around the $70,000, $80,000 mark for an entry level one up to about $100,000. But, you know, when you think about it, the kind of performance it offers, the looks, it looks fantastic. You know, you imagine that MG will throw everything in terms of features that they have available to it as well. So, you know, this will be a really, really highly spec car for that kind of money. And I think we're starting to see that Australian customers are warming to the idea of paying more and more for Chinese branded cars. It's less of an issue about where it comes from, and it's more about, you know, how it performs, what it has in terms of features and things like that. So,
other thing with the Cyberster is $100,000 for a car that looks like that. And as James said, it's going to be well spec'd. It's quick. Even the base model, which Top Gear in the UK recently did a review of on Shanghai roads, does 0 to 100 in 5.something seconds. That's buying you hardly any BMW Z4. Mercedes doesn't really offer an equivalent anymore. The SLC's gone. I'm actually struggling to think of any other sort of sporty convertible. The Boxster is gone from Australia until the electric version arrives. Polestar doesn't have that crazy concept it showed off just yet. I can't really think of any equivalent for less than, call it, $120,000, $130,000.
Mustang would be your closest thing, I think.
That's a very Mustang good point, convertible.
But a very, very different car.
Yeah, and I don't recall what Mercedes has priced a CLE at. But then when you think about it, like a Toyota Supra is about the same money anyway. And, you know, a really highly spec Nissan Z is, you know, in the $80,000 realm as well now. So, you know, for some people, people see electric as being premium. So, you know, if you can get an all-electric sports car for the same price as a combustion-powered one from a legacy brand, that's not only faster, looks really special, you know, it's a convertible as well, which again is premium. So there's a lot of things that they can sort of bake in there that justifies that price. And I think as long as you're sort of in the same realm as traditional competitors, you can still sort of justify it. And there'll be some people that take the leap. But, you know, the sports car segment's really unique in that it's very, very brand-led. It's very, you know, you've got real loyalist buyers in there that will be, I'm a Mustang owner, I'm a Porsche owner, I'm a BMW owner. MG has a lot of work to do around, you know, getting people to understand what that car offers and then making them feel like they can take that chance on a brand new car that is not really from, you know, an established nameplate.
Well, MG, as soon as you have one available for us, we're happy to drag race and give some credibility. Okay? So let us know, write to us, podcast@carexpert.com.au. We'll sort it out for you. All right, this week, before we dive into Beijing, I just want to know, what car would you guys buy? This one is a tricky one. It's very hard. What sub $30,000 hatchback would you guys buy? There's not many options, but there are a few good ones in there. I'll open it up, whoever wants to
take it. Is it $30,000 before on road cost?
$30,000 is whatever the price is.
Yeah. I think we just sort of did this exercise in a written piece, but I chose the base Volkswagen Polo because my sister has one and we really, really enjoy that car. And every time I drive it, I'm always really surprised at how just good that thing is all round. There are some little things with the transmission stuff that you have to work your way around, but as a DSG owner, and she's got one as well, it's you sort of learn to drive with it. Not everyone will do it, but that was my pick.
I'm going for economy. I'm going for a base Toyota Yaris Hybrid. I'm going to save as much fuel as possible and spend all of the savings on the fun car that I'm hoping the other money I've got is being put towards.
In this dream scenario.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Well, look, if you're hoping to buy a sub $30,000 hatchback, head to Google, type in Help Me Car Expert and try out a car chooser tool. You can actually specifically select hatchbacks under $30,000 and we'll show you a whole list of everything that's available in Australia to buy. We might even be able to get you into one sooner than you think. Give it a try, Help Me Car Expert at Google, and leave a comment and let us know how it went for you. All right, guys, time to talk about the Beijing Motor Show. Now, there's a lot to get through here, so we've left this to the back half of the podcast. If you do want to see any of the cars we're talking about, you can either jump on the YouTube channel if you're listening or head to the Car Expert website because we've got write-ups on each and every single one of these. But let's dive in. We're going to play a little bit of Hot or Not, but we're also going to just talk about them a little bit as we go through. So going to start out with Smart. Now, you might remember Smart. They were a Mercedes-Benz offshoot, and they made the 4.2, and they also made that little coupe thing as
well. Yeah, it was the Roadster, I want to say.
Something along those
lines. And
they
had the bigger 4.4 as well.
Yeah, anyway, silly little cars, but they've now made a bigger car, and it's fully electric. It's called the Smart Hashtag 5. I don't know, it's probably just called the Smart 5, but it's a fully electric off-roader. So before we dive into the details, hot or not?
I'm saying hot because there's something really funny about tiny, cute city cars dressed up in aggressive gear.
James?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of the headline features, 100-ish kilowatt hour battery. Obviously, that's TBD. They reckon over 500 kilometers of range. Again, TBD. But it is interesting because there's no B pillar. It has the front doors open normally, and then the back doors are like suicide doors. It's just a big gaping hole to climb in and out of.
I'm going to leave you guys with this one.
I don't know. Scott, I mean, do we know much more about it at this point in time?
So this is the latest in Smart's latest rebirth. Initially, it was a partnership between, I think, Mercedes-Benz and Swatch, potentially. And then from there, it's now, I believe, Mercedes-Benz and Geely, or just Geely. I'm not sure which.
Geely and Volvo as well.
Correct, yeah. So it's Chinese-focused. They've got a number of cars, starting with some really funky-looking little SUVs. Beyond that, this is their next move upmarket. It's their next move into a bigger space. And it's something that previously Smart has tried to do. The 4-4 was a big version of a small car and it didn't quite sell in the way I think Smart wanted. This time they've built towards it with the brand being about more than just city cars. So it's a logical next step. Whether we'll ever see them in Australia is a different thing entirely. I doubt we will because they are very focused on the Chinese market.
Now, the real question is, can a park nose into a car park on the street and not stick out further than a normal car does? That's the real test of a Smart.
With a 100 kilowatt hour battery, I would say absolutely not, probably unless not. The battery is taller than us.
Yeah, I mean, look, one thing about that, 100 kilowatt hour battery generally means it's going to weigh a lot.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
As an off-roader, may not be the best thing. And we've seen when we tested that Rivian in the States, whilst, you know, it is kind of capable, there is a lot of compromise that come once you start getting those big numbers. Okay, Mini. Mini are back with another not-so-mini car, but it's called the Aceman this time. James, I know you're a fan of Minis, so do you want to tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah, so it's basically like a replacement for the old five-door hatch that is no more. So now Mini now has the Cooper hatch, which is a new three-door. They have the Countryman, and now the Aceman now slots in between that. Now, it's based, I believe, still on a GWM electric platform, and basically uses the same underpinnings as the hatchback. So you've got two versions, an E and an SE. The E has a smaller battery and a less powerful electric motor, and then the SE has a more powerful electric motor with a bigger battery. So I think the base model is probably like around 300 and something kilometers of range, and then the higher spec one's over 400. And I think it looks really cool. It's got all the new design elements that we've seen out of the new Mini. So the interior is really cool. It uses no animal products. It's got that really cool circular OLED display, which is really configurable. And I just like how Mini has really sort of gone back to having a very distinctive identity. It doesn't really feel as derivative of a BMW as the old ones perhaps were in its more recent generations. And I just think it's a really cool new product for them that sort of goes back to where the, I think was it called the Paceman, that sort of coupe-ish Countryman thing from the first generation that was sort of too small to be a proper crossover, but then too big to be a Mini. Whereas now that's sort of where the industry has gone and where Mini's gone as well. So that it sort of sits in a nice spot there. I'll be really interested to see how it looks in person, but I really like how it looks in the photos.
It's a hot from James, Scott.
It's a hot from me. I think it looks like the Paceman should have back in the day. And I think as well, Mini, one of the problems it had was it tried to make everything look like the original Mini from back in the day. And that five-door hatch, I know it sold okay, but it was a blobby, ugly thing to look at. It wasn't very practical. This makes a heap more sense, where the three-door hatch can be their hero car, but the Aceman, the Countryman, and whatever else is still to come can be the practical options for people who love what the brand is doing but don't necessarily have, you know, room in their life for a three-door hatch.
Mm. I mean, it's not exactly small. It's over 4 meters long, so it's a fairly generously sized car for something that's probably got 2.5 doors on it. 42 kilowatt hour battery. So definitely not aimed at like long distance. It's definitely a city car, but I guess we'll hopefully see them on the road sometime in the near future, maybe.
I think it's coming to here at the end of this year or early next. So it's not actually that far away.
Okay, not far away at all, especially the life of cars. All right, BMW. We're going to stick with BMW for a second. They've unveiled a new 4 Series and an updated i4. And they, to me, look a lot like BMW 4 Series, but I guess it's no great surprise. Hot or not?
The same as before, really. They're good-looking cars, I guess. New tail lights, some new interior tech. No real word on what engines we'll get in Australia. It's just a resounding car.
Yep, it's just BMW, James.
Yeah, well, it is. I'll say it looks fine. Like, I don't really have that strong feelings about it. It is very much the same as the coupe and convertible updates that we saw earlier in the year. This is just the four-door version. So it's nice to see that the i4 now gets the same updates as the other ones. But yeah, it's a fairly minor change.
Mm, yeah, but look, I'm sure it'll work great and do everything it's meant to do. We just talked about Lamborghini. Lamborghini unveiled a Urus SE, which I'm pretty sure was an iPhone model once upon a time, but it's a plug-in hybrid version of the Urus, which if that car needed more power, I wasn't aware of it. But they've given it an extra, what has it got, a 26 kilowatt hour battery, which gives an extra 140 kilowatts of power and 480 newton meters of torque on top of what that twin turbo V8 was already outputting. Hot or not?
I think it's cool because this one, I believe, replaces the conventional combustion powered version. So now you can only get the plug-in hybrid, I think, for new orders now. I remember when the Urus was revealed years and years ago, they've been talking about a plug-in hybrid for a very, very long time and just never did it. So I'll reserve my judgment on how cool it is for perhaps once we see it on the roads, because that is a lot of, you know, the battery and everything and the electric motor, that's a lot of things to compensate for in terms of how it performs and how it handles. Remember, it's already a very big car. Lamborghinis are meant to be, you know, tracksters. And that was one thing that was really good about the standard one, is that it was a proper performance SUV, not just a dressed up Touareg. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do with this plug-in hybrid system, because I think they've borrowed it from Porsche. So hopefully that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
I'm saying hot. I've been lucky enough to drive the regular V8 Urus on Phillip Island on the track, and it's got some incredible tech that makes it feel miles lighter than it already is. I don't think Lamborghini is going to struggle to hide the extra weight from the FEV, and that extra performance is going to be welcome. So it's a tick from me.
As long as it sounds as good as the standard internal combustion one did.
And it's the same engine, cool. So it should be fine.
Yeah, it is going to be around $450,000. So it's a lot of money. A lot of money.
Pocket change to the average buyer.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure we'll see plenty of them getting around the streets soon. This one, the Mazda EZ6 or EZ6, I'm not really sure which one it is. It's going to be sold as a FEV and an EV, but only in China. So what do we think of that? Looks like an electric version of the Mazda 6, I guess.
It's an electric version of a Chinese vehicle that already exists. Mazda's got a joint venture over there with Chang'an. I actually quite like the look of it. I think Mazda, it's done its best to make this look like a Mazda, and there's still some elements that don't match up with what we expect of Mazda in Australia. But if they were to bring it to Australia as a big luxury flagship, I don't know if they'd sell that many, but it certainly wouldn't look out of place alongside a CX-90 in their showroom. I'm curious to know what happens to Mazda globally with their electric cars. The MX-30's come and gone. We've got new emission standards coming in Australia soon. Obviously, Europe's going that way very aggressively as well, as is the States. Mazda's one brand that doesn't really have a clear roadmap, and potentially Chinese vehicles like this are a way for it to get its foot in the door if they can get them global.
Well, I'll be honest, I forgot about the Mazda MX-30, so glad you brought that up. James, what do you think of the EZ6?
Yeah, I like the look of it too. I covered the lead-up story for it because it was teased a couple of times, and then so seeing the Chang'an car that it's based on and the Mazda version, they've done a really good job at making it a Mazda. It actually kind of looks like a really nice evolutionary progression of the Mazda 6 design. They've managed to incorporate a lot of Mazda design elements into the interior as well, but like the infotainment and the cluster and everything is still very much borrowed from the donor car. And like Scott said, I think it'll be really interesting to see what that means for Mazda globally, because it's the first time we've really seen them get really serious about proper full electrification. We've seen a lot of mild hybrid stuff. They brought out the plug-in hybrids with the large cars. This is like their first like new EV that's probably more competitive with the stuff that we've seen from like Tesla and things like that. So there's meant to be a 6E or something to that effect that's coming out somewhere in the world. I think in Europe they've trademarked that name. It'll be interesting to see whether it's a version of this or whether it's a completely new vehicle on the new architectures that they're meant to be bringing out.
Yep, time will tell. All right, Chery, going to jump down to them and their sub-brand Jaecoo.
Jaecoo.
Jaecoo, yeah.
Like the fridges, but with an extra O.
Yes, okay.
That's Jaecoo, not Jaecoo.
So they've got a couple of models. So we'll just run through it. We'll start with Chery, the Tiggo 9 Pro plug-in hybrid. Hot or not?
Looks good as family SUVs go. And based on the fact we get the 7 and the 8 Pro in Australia, it would make sense for the 9 to come here as well.
James?
I wasn't in love with it. It was kind of a little bit funny from the front, but it's like a mix of a few different cars, but like the bad genes of all of them.
Ooh.
I didn't like it. Okay, I much prefer the Tiggo 8 Pro Max. I can't remember which iPhone they've got.
Yeah. So the Tiggo 9, obviously, so we've tested the 7 Pro on the channel. This will obviously be a bigger version of that. third row of seats in it? Is that the?
I believe so. Yeah. Okay. The Tiggo 8 Pro that you're driving in a Pro Max that you're driving in a couple of weeks. That's a 7-seater, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's like a Mitsubishi Outlander competitor. So this one's, I think, meant to be a little bit of a step up in terms of premiumness. I'm not sure how much larger it is than the Tiggo 8. I haven't seen a Tiggo 8, but I know it's big. So if this is now a 9, it's either slightly bigger again or more premium. It's quite a big thing.
It's starting to sound like the Audi numbers where they all sort of blend together.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly. It's a bit like that.
Okay, we'll move on to the J7. So it's a petrol-only SUV coming to Australia, hot or not?
I think it looks good. Yep. And Chery said that it's open to bringing more of these sub-brand cars to Australia, for want of a better term. They're moving really aggressively here. And this, as a premium product that looks a bit different to the rest of the Chery range, I definitely can see taking on some of the new higher-end Havel stuff in a really interesting head-to-head.
Mm-hmm. James?
Yeah, I feel the same. I think it was a little bit more of its own design and a little bit smarter than the Tiggo 9. The specs were sort of, we didn't get a whole lot of imagery of it, so it's sort of hard to tell, you know, how that would all translate in person, what the interior looks like, for example, but it definitely looks like something that would, I think, be appealing to people who buy in that segment here.
Okay, and then the J8, which is a plug-in hybrid, whether it's the same as the 7 or the 8, I'm not really sure, but it's a plug-in hybrid version SUV. What do you guys think of that?
Very good.
You turned to plug-in hybrids all of a sudden.
No, I think it looks strange. Good. I can't comment on the plug-in hybrid idea.
2 weeks in a row, he said he likes certain plug-in hybrids. So.
We love consistency.
Yes, don't bank on it. This motor show obviously was really interesting for the sheer volume of what was revealed, but so much of it was very practical family SUV stuff or hybrid versions or plug-in hybrid versions. I feel kind of the same for all of them. You know, we're now at a point where most of the stuff being revealed out of China looks pretty good, is likely to be pretty affordably priced and has no great sort of, you know, big red mark against it that means we wouldn't consider it. So I suppose that's more where it comes from. It's like, well, yeah, there's no reason not to think it's interesting at this point. And until we drive it, there's not much more I can say.
That's true. James, what do you think of the J8 plug-in hybrid?
I was probably more excited by the specs. I think what the Chinese brands are really doing is pushing the plug-in hybrid stuff and putting, you know, really big batteries with really good electric range. And given it's not a full electric vehicle, and it's probably more suitable for a car that size where being totally reliant on EV range is less of an issue when you've got the backup of a petrol engine and having, you know, a cabin that large, you can load it up with people and whatever. And I think they're claiming about 100 Ks of range or something like that, which is pretty substantial. So if they can achieve that in real world, that's pretty competitive.
Yeah, it's a fair like more than an Outlander plug-in hybrid does.
Absolutely.
So if they could do that. All right, time to move into concept land. So this is where it gets a little bit more outlandish. We'll start with the Volkswagen ID code, which seems like a sleeker, more SUV version of the ID4 sort of thing. I don't really know how to describe it, but it looks really cool to me. But what do you guys think, hot or not?
It looks like a Volkswagen EV. It's definitely a little bit slicker than an ID4, but this actually shows off what Volkswagen wants to do with its China-focused EVs. Most brands have sort of spin-offs for China because that market is very different to the rest of the world. The interior looks like an ID4 based on what I've seen from the ground. So, yeah, I think it looks great, but whether it will actually actively inform what we're getting in Australia or the rest of the world beyond China kind of remains to be seen.
James, what do you think?
I think it looks cool too, and if they can bring out a production version that sort of apes that design, I think Volkswagen's more recent ID concepts are much nicer than the stuff that they did originally. It's less blobby and like generic and a little bit more sleek and a hark back to their previous generation of stuff, maybe in the 20 teens. Is that the era that we're going to call it? They had a really good era of design then, which I think this is sort of coming back to. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in terms of a production spec vehicle.
All right. From Mazda, they have the Arata EV concept, which looks a lot like the ID code concept, but it's a Mazda. So what do you guys think of that?
I really liked this one. I think the purpley color that they brought it out in is really interesting, but the actual design is a nice progression of their current stuff and a nice look into what we could see in a couple of years from them. I think it was maybe about 6.5 size, and we've been wondering what a successor to that car will look like because they've not really disclose whether it's going to be the 650 that's available overseas or whether it's going to be an entirely new vehicle. And if Mazda can translate this quite sharp design to a very mainstream electric vehicle, I think that would be really good. And they're sort of teasing it on all their global portals as well. So it might end up being an export car, not just for China. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, currently it's just for China. So we'll see. Scott, what do you think?
Hot. Love the look. Hope the next CX-5 looks just like it.
All right. Toyota. This is an interesting one. They've got the BZ3X and the BZ3C, which look more like MPV cars compared to the BZ4X, which is like a SUV crossover type thing. But what do you guys think of them? I think they're interesting looking.
I think that's a very generous way of putting it. Toyota already has a Corolla-sized BZ electric car in China. This is the logical continuation of that. It's another example of the fact that Chinese people and Chinese buyers like very different things to what the rest of the world likes when it comes to cars. This is also part of a joint venture. It's not Toyota doing it on its own. So, yeah, I don't know that we should read too much into it for Australia. But in terms of specific stuff for the Chinese market, it seems like Toyota has its finger pretty closely on the pulse.
James?
I actually keep getting confused about which one's which. There was one that had like a yellow-black colour scheme or something like that. I liked that one. Okay. I don't know which one that is. So.
All right. Well, we'll flash that up on the screen. Yeah. If you're watching, so you know this is the one James likes. All right, Nissan. Nissan's interesting. They've been following Taylor Swift this year and they've gone into the Eras tour. They've got four concepts, the Epoch, the Evo, the Epic and the Era. Which are a variety of sedans and SUVs, all concepts at this stage. But what do you guys think of those? Feel free to pick one of them that you like or all of them.
Again, I don't remember which one was which, but there was the sedan one looked cool and there was one that had really funky wheels. It was like instead of having conventional spokes or something like that, it was just like little pixel squares with like an insert with the Nissan logo. So it's cool to see Nissan getting really creative with the designs. I don't know how much that will come into whatever they've got planned in the coming years, because they just announced they have a really big push for new electric vehicles in the next 5 years or so. They've got a massive product rollout and they're all going to be quite distinctive. So I'll be interested to see how that translates into production cuts, because they do make some really nice looking cars. A lot of their SUVs at the moment are really nice looking vehicles and these ones are a bit more out there, but I guess they might tone it down for the production spec.
Nissan's on a roll at the moment. Last year at Tokyo, we saw the Hyperforce, which is just a GTR that's not a GTR. It goes to show that even beyond the really sporty stuff, Nissan has some really cool ideas about design. And I'm with James, the sedan, which I also can't remember the name of, unfortunately, was the one that most caught my eye.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll go through you guys on the spot there. But there's a few more that were on there. Check them out on the Car Expert website. But I'll throw you guys on the spot. Which one of all of those was your pick? Which was your favorite that you saw come out of Beijing?
I'm going Mini Aceman.
Okay.
I'm going to go straight out of the blocks. It kind of feels like Mini's back on the right track and I'm really excited to see it in Australia.
Okay, James?
Well, to avoid copying him, I might go with the Mazda Arata concept. I think that was a really cool design piece. I really hope that the future products look like this. It was just in general good to see Mazda getting really serious about electrification.
I just hope with that they bring back proper touchscreens and not that silly dial thing, but that's all I hope for. But yeah, okay, cool. Well, what is your favorite thing from the Beijing Motor Show? Leave a comment below and let us know. All right, guys, time for our picks of the week. I'll throw it over to James first. What is your pick this week,
Mike? Well, my pick is actually a set of picks. So I follow an Australian photographer named, he goes by the handle North Borders. He's a really cool guy. I've met him a couple of times and he does really, really cool work. He recently did something with Young Timers Garage YTG where he took out their Jaguar XJ220 and took it out to, I think, Mount Macedon or something like that. And
that's impressive it got up there, to be
honest. Yeah, and photographed it. It's a silver car, so it's a fairly boring spec, but the street that he photographed it on was, it's autumn now, so you get all the orange leaves and the trees are all orange and then the streets are lined with the leaves as well. It kind of looks like something out of a video game. Stunning photos. So make sure you check out his Instagram because he does some really, really cool stuff.
Scott, what do you got?
I sent this to you last week on Instagram. We used Draggy to do all of our performance testing on our videos. Paul just has the phone in the car with him. Someone took their Draggy app on an airplane and sat down for launch or for takeoff. And I did very much enjoy watching. The 0 to 100 is quite slow because it takes a little bit to get a big, heavy plane moving. But tell you what, the 300 to 400 was very, very quick.
Yes, at least it didn't show deceleration. That's,
yeah, exactly.
That's a good thing. I won't explain the intricacies of a turbo engine, but very slow to get going, a lot of mass, but when they do
move, once you're up and running.
Oh, and once they're in the air, there's less resistance. Oh, they rocket. Mine, I want to talk about motor racing for a second. Eagle's looking at me very funny because it's not motor racing as far as he's concerned.
The man and machine in perfect harmony fighting each other, yep. Woman and machine in perfect harmony fighting each other. That's the dream, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, this was man and machine in harmony via a Wi-Fi connection. So in Abu Dhabi, they just ran the A2RL race over the weekend, which is autonomous race cars. They took Super Formula cars, which are like sort of mini Formula One cars, kitted them out with a bunch of cameras and sensors and radars and LiDARs, and then sent them racing on the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix circuit. I don't know how well anyone expected it to go. There was some interesting things that came out of it. Like cars would just jink all over the place. Yeah. Sometimes they would just spear into the barriers. But then they attempted to actually hold a race with all the cars on the track at the same time. They were meant to do 6 laps of green flag running. I think they got 2 out in the end. And they also did a thing where they actually raced a real driver, like a real human in a car against it, which didn't fare well for the AI thing. But I think what's really interesting is the tech that they're testing here is what they're going to look at putting in cars at some point in the future. And we've seen in San Francisco, they've got the Waymo taxis that you can get around in that self-drive. They're all moving very slow speeds. These cars were, in theory, meant to go very fast, didn't quite get there in the end. But it does show you that the tech is getting better, and these were all university students who were able to put these together. So when we actually get a company that has billions of dollars to spend on something like this, I think that these self-driving cars might actually be closer than we think. So whether the legislation allows for it, but...
we've been saying that for so long.
But now I've actually seen race cars, a couple crash. Of them managed to make it around a track.
Yeah, well, that's an improvement. I remember there was Robo Race, which was, I think, an extension of the Formula E Championship. Yeah. And I'll never forget, it was like their first test car where the promo videos went, it was going around some track. I can't remember which one it was. But then there was some footage that came out where they were going to start this like flying lap. And the first thing it did was like go left and smashed itself into the barrier as if it sacrificed itself. And it was the funniest thing ever, but I'm not sure I'm ready to put my life in the hands of these sensors just yet.
They need to start modeling the AI on Verstappen instead of Kobayashi or Grosjean.
Yes.
Maybe that's the problem.
Yes. Well, look, full credit to Daniel Kvyat. He finally overtook a car on a Formula One racetrack. So well done, Daniel
Kvyat. The torpedo.
Yes. Look, that pretty much brings us to the end this week, guys. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Stay tuned for my review of the X2 and iX2 later this week on the website. And then I think we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
Along with the new Isuzu D-Max next week.
Yes, some minor updates to the front, which is pretty much how Isuzu does their model upgrades. But I think it looks great, personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
It looks really good. And the iX2, I think, looks really good too. So,
well, it looks just like an X2.
It does, but with an eye on the back. So stay tuned. All that and more coming in the coming weeks. And as promised, very soon, Scott's away next week.
Yeah.
But the week after that, we are going to dive into some breakdown of electric vehicle running costs. So make sure you subscribe for that. Thank you, all of you, for joining us. Thanks, guys, for coming and sitting down again. We'll see you all next week.